This is Unfortunate History.
What's up, everybody? This is Cody Pennington.
And this is Greg Skinner.
And welcome to Unfortunate History. This is a podcast that covers the wacky, interesting, and unfortunate moments in history. And today, we are covering Frank Serpico.
Frank Serpico. I know the name. I have no idea about the story. As usual.
It's an interesting story. I love this guy. He is so cool. And you'll see a little bit later why he's just so cool. But I actually learned about him in my high school criminal justice class, for a class that I didn't even really need to take. Right. But the guy that was teaching it used to be a cop, and he was talking about Frank Serpico and how they grew up on the same street and all this stuff. And I was like, man, that guy sounds like a badass. And I didn't think his life was a real, like, this was all real. I thought it was fake, honestly.
See, I do know the name, and I'm sure probably halfway through this podcast, I will have one of those moments where I go, oh, I know who this is. But as it stands, I'm drawing blanks.
Yeah, you might do. We'll see. Now, Frank Serpico was a New York City police officer during the 60s and 70s who fought against the disgusting levels of corruption in the NYPD. He actually made a huge mark on the NYPD that lasts even to this day.
See, I feel like I did know that. I thought he might be a cop. Things are starting to come back to me. But hang on, I'm pretty sure the NYPD is still kind of fucked now, is it not?
I will get to that later. But most people know Serpico because they've heard when you see an awesome cop or a cop that does their job really well, a lot of people will call him a Serpico. It's kind of in America that you hear that quite a bit. But most people don't know what it means.
Isn't it? There's a film called Serpico as well, I think. I don't think I've seen it, but
there sure is. There was a film about Serpico called Serpico, and he's played by Al Pacino. It's fantastic.
Oh, okay.
Actually, that's a really good place to start with our sources, because the film Serpico follows our main source today, Peter Massey's book by the same name, Serpico. It follows it pretty much to a T, but Frank Serpico himself came out a little bit later and said some of the scenes were a bit embellished, but the main scene towards the end of this episode, the one that was absolutely ridiculous, absolutely did happen in real life, and we'll get to that in a little bit.
Well, fair play to him for admitting it, because usually if someone's got a film made about them, you want to seem as badass as possible, don't you? So he actually owned up to that. Some of it was embellished, like every film does anyway.
It wasn't even the badass parts that were embellished. It was certain parts. I'll tell you which ones it was when we get there, but it wasn't even the badass parts. The badass parts actually happened.
Okay.
Because Frank Serpico was a badass.
Okay.
Now, Frank Serpico was born in 1932 in Brooklyn, New York, to parents Vincenzo and Maria Serpico. His family was relatively lower class, with his parents having immigrated to New York City from Italy. Now, Maria, his mother, worked in candy factories, while his father, Vincenzo, owned his own shoe repair shop. Now, Frank's family was actually a very close family, and his parents were very attentive. He had a great upbringing. His father was actually known to be a very caring man, which is not normal for the 30s.
No, not at all. I was expecting, like, typically, they're getting beaten up every 20 minutes for something in those times anyway, especially in Brooklyn, New York.
Yeah, you didn't eat those peas that we slaved over to buy for you. It's like, Dad, we only have 3 peas each. I'm so full from that tiny piece of steak.
I always thought, though, why did so many Italians come over to the States? Why is that a thing? Because Italy's not typically, you know, a war-torn shit country.
Well, I think actually not war-torn, but I think it is run by the mafia. I don't think that's even an exaggeration. I think it is.
Okay, possibly, yeah.
But yeah. Well, they were coming over at this time, I would assume, because it was the land of opportunity. This was like the big place to go to make your future. You come to America to make it rich, and a lot of immigrants actually did, especially coming at this time. They made fortunes.
Again, because in New York, especially Brooklyn, a lot of Italian-Americans, aren't there?
Yeah, even to this day. Now, Serpico can almost be described as a lifelong cop. He seems to have spent most of his life standing up to bullies and villains. One time in his youth, he had a toy gun that he had found in a dumpster, and he had repaired it with some, I think he said it was rubber bands. And he had this toy gun stolen by a group of bullies at knife point. They held this kid up at knife point. But instead of running away, he decided to chase the bullies down. But unfortunately, he actually did not catch up to the boys. But this would teach him an important lesson that he would use throughout his life, was that justice was very hard to come by.
Again, that's pretty common today.
Yeah, you'd think so. But you're going to be surprised at the end of this episode about what he's fighting in his later lives. Or later life. What he's fighting is a bit more... I mean, obviously today it's pretty rough. It always probably will be. But still, The stuff that he's fighting is pretty intense. Now, growing up in his working class neighborhood, Serpico witnessed countless crimes throughout his youth. From watching vehicles being robbed to actually seeing a dead body out his own window, he witnessed the worst that crime could offer. But what really stuck with him throughout these crimes was the police. He saw the police as the good guys, the shining light compared to the criminal darkness. And he knew from this very, very young age that this would be his future.
Oh.
However, an amazing distinction from Serpico and the image most have of the police is the role that he believed they served. To Serpico, the police weren't gun-toting bullies with badges, like a lot of people see them today and even at this time. Instead, he felt the role of the police was to befriend and protect the weak. But this image was soon completely torn apart when he realized that some cops took advantage of their positions.
Look, I say, isn't that generally what the police should be? I know it's not, but you'd hope that is what they would be. But it's just not, because you do get people who, I guess, on power trips, really, who join the force, especially in America, when you just get given a gun.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when the Metropolitan Police in London, when that stuff was brought in, this was to just stop rampant crime.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not necessarily a befriending the public type role. It's a you need to stop breaking the law type role.
Mm.
So I don't think it was made to be a befriending and like a jolly old neighborhood cop. It was, but it should have by this point, especially with the drop in crime. Well, there's still quite a bit of crime in the 30s, but still you would hope that it would have progressed into a more, I don't know, accepting career field where people kind of used their common sense with society, knowing that if you go out and beat people up with billy clubs, it's probably not going to win you any favors.
Yeah. So I think there should be a happy medium with the police in between. Like you need to be respected. And in some ways, you do need to be kind of feared.
I suppose it's not feared. I mean, respected is the right term, I suppose. But that's also even a hard one, because if they're going to go around beating people up, why would they deserve respect?
No, it's not. But again, it's like, I know the police over here are vastly different to the police in America. But the police over here, it doesn't seem like they get any respect at all. Not in the areas of grew up anywhere,
right?
But yeah, whereas in America, from what I see online, from like American cops, specifically the NYPD, they are feared.
Now, one particular moment of the police taking advantage of their position that really stood out to Frank Serpico and stuck with him for a long time was when a police officer came into his father Vincenzo's shop for a shoe shine. And Serpico himself actually polished the cop's shoes until polished them really well, actually, saying that they actually ended up showing a reflection. You know, proper polishing these things. We're talking true grit polishing here. And then the cop just walked out without paying. No words, just stood up and walked out. And this really stuck in Frank's mind pretty much for the rest of his life, because it just really struck him as odd that this good guy just literally didn't care enough to even follow the law.
Yeah, okay. So this was the thing that, from a shoe shine, that was it?
No, it wasn't the only thing. We're going to get to a couple more scenarios, obviously, but the first thing at a young age that he experienced, and that stuck with him. Because, you know, things that happen to you when you're young, they stick with you sometimes.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah. Now, around the age of 14, Serpico entered St. Francis Preparatory School. And on his application to the school, he was asked about his career goals. And in the box, Frank filled in plainclothesman, talking about, obviously, a plainclothes police officer. And obviously, he had already decided that this would be his future career, even at 14.
Mm-hmm.
Throughout his time at school, he continued to actually fight against the injustices that he witnessed, as he had always done. And once he graduated at 17, he fought a major injustice, I suppose you'd say, when he enlisted in the army.
Oh.
Serpico spent 2 years in the army stationed in Korea, and while there, he actually absorbed a lot of the Asian culture. And this is an interesting thing about Serpico, is that when he went somewhere that was different from his upbringing, he would try to absorb it and try to experience it. He wouldn't try to say, why aren't you speaking English in Korea?
Why can't I get a hot dog?
Yeah, exactly. See, by this time in his life, he was already fluent in French, Italian, and Spanish by the time he joined the military. And this obviously not being enough, during his time in Korea, he also decided to learn Japanese.
Fuck. See, I can understand learning the other language. Japanese, they have a whole different alphabet. How does anyone learn Japanese?
I don't think he learned to write it. But you know what? Maybe we'll get him on for an interview or something. Or will we?
Or will we?
When he returned to the U.S., he still had his sights set on becoming a cop. So he enrolled in the Brooklyn College, studying police science, and took the New York Police Department exam. And before hearing about his results, he decided to get some extra experience working as a private investigator during his schooling. I don't know how much work he got, but...
So he became a PI before he even became a cop.
I know, yeah. It's usually the other way around. You get disgruntled and you start figuring out who's cheating on rich widows and stuff, yeah, you know?
You need to smoke 40 Marlboro a day and have grey stubble and wear a big trench coat. Be slightly overweight.
Slightly overweight. That's what I was going to say. Yeah, slightly.
Not too fat, but just enough overweight for you to be visibly unhealthy.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. Now, in late 1959, he did receive word that he passed the police exam and was sworn in as a probationary officer. Yay!
Yes!
However, Serpico was very naive about the culture of the NYPD. There was already a way of doing things, and he was about to find that out.
Mm-hmm.
Ad break. Get this Casper mattress. Sponsor us.
Anyone. Give us something.
Now, as it's described, at this point in the history of the NYPD, it still had many officers who had grown up during the Depression. Most of these officers, they had their own ideas of how things should be run. There was already a way of doing things, but this way of doing things didn't exactly jive with Serpico. That is not the only time I'll use the word jive.
Jive.
Yeah.
Fitting with the time, yeah?
Yeah, fitting with the time, yeah. That's what we try to do. We try to transport you back.
We embrace the culture of the time period that we're covering, much like Serpico and when he traveled the world.
Exactly. Now, Serpico had one goal. One goal, pretty much throughout his entire life, to be a good cop. And to him, that meant helping the helpless and making sure justice always prevailed. He saw the role of the police as a critical role to society. They were the gatekeepers of justice to Serpico, and he took this very seriously. But the system didn't seem to agree with him.
I was going to say, he's not wrong, really. The police are important, and they should be seen as important. But like you said, and like I'm sure will be covered, it is abused. It's an abused system.
100%. Yeah, it's absolutely an abused system. And it's unfortunate for him because I suppose it is naivete, but he went in thinking, this is the police. They are the force of good. And that's all it was.
Look, could you imagine a society that doesn't have a police force? I look, say, maybe it's because of the places I grew up in. It'd be chaos.
Well, realistically, there's always, not always, but there has been a form of enforcement in society for, you know, centuries, millennia. You're talking, I mean, look at guards in Rome, you know, and look at even guards for castles in the medieval period. There's always been some kind of enforcement. But until the cops came around, obviously, it was between that area before, between guards and cops, it was like hell.
I do believe it's necessary because there'd be no rule. Like, even though earlier I was saying about how like British cops aren't as respected as, or feared, should I say, as American ones. But at the same time, if you think about it, if people just decided to go, actually, I've had enough, there's not enough cops to enforce an entire country, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
It's basically purely on theory or something, essentially, isn't it? Like, just the knowledge that they're there is usually enough to keep most people in line.
Well, it's also that, but then also the fact that humans have grown as societal creatures, haven't we? We've grown from cavemen. We knew that we had to band together to work together and to work to progress together. So that's been a known thing. So I think, yes, the fear of being put in jail is a thing, but I think also innately we all know that we don't go around punching grandmothers in the face.
Oh, again, I don't know, maybe this says something about where I grew up, but that was probably a thing that happened where I'm from.
No, yeah, there are people, obviously, and that's why we need the police. But human beings in general are advanced creatures. You know, we've advanced to the point where we need each other. Now, Serpico first experienced the NYPD's so-called brotherhood firsthand when he and a partner were sent to guard a synagogue that had recently been vandalized. As luck would have it, Serpico and his partner were able to actually arrest two suspects in the vandalism. To the two cops, this was likely seen as a very big deal. They were actually still in the police academy at this point, so they assumed they would receive an award, one that was referred to as a mayor's trophy, for the best award or best arrest in the academy. So that was pretty a big award, I suppose, for each class that goes through the academy. But although his actions were worthy of something, it was only just a citation. They weren't worthy of getting anything, really. And they were only worthy of getting a citation only if they decided to slip the clerk a bit of cash to do the paperwork for them. So hard work, it would seem, did not take you very far in the NYPD without a bit of money alongside it.
Yeah. Okay. We've already seen where this is going, isn't it?
Yeah. Greasing the wheels a bit.
Yep. World revolves around money.
Exactly. Now, apparently, there are two main ways to progress in the NYPD. First, you can make a ton of arrests, basically going at it as a cop, or you can pass a lot of tests. Now, Serpico decided that he preferred arresting the bad guys to studying at his desk. So when he was assigned to the 81st Precinct in Brooklyn, he would actually annoy his lieutenant with the number of arrests he would bring in each night. See, the way it is apparently supposed to work is that after you make an arrest, you would just go home for the night because you would be in court the next morning.
Mm-hmm.
But Serpico didn't like that. So he would actually go back out on the street and make two or three arrests a night. And his lieutenant was taking the test-taking route, studying for captain. And all of these Serpico arrests weren't really jiving with his study time. Number two. So even from his first assignments, Serpico was already butting heads with his bosses as well as other officers.
But for doing his job?
For doing his job well.
He was being good at his job. How is this a problem?
This is honestly like box standard exactly what happens in the military. You know what I mean? Like you can either sit and study or you can get really good at your job. And the people that do not get really good at their job are the ones that get promoted. And they're in charge of everybody.
See, I feel like that's a common thing around a lot of industries, because I feel like there are people who tend to just be shit at what they do, who go into high places. But again, like, especially as a police officer, you'd think the more arrests he would... Again, I suppose there's no real record of what he's making arrests for, is it? Like, if he's catching three murderers a night, great work. But is he busting people for, like, jaywalking or something like that?
Well, either way, he's still doing his job, isn't he? I mean, he's still making... jaywalking's not an arrestable offense, but...
I don't know. I'm not American.
No, it's like you get a fine if they decide to, but they rarely decide to. He reminds me of Simon Pegg's character in Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, that's a great... Actually, that's a good link.
It's pretty much Serpico.
Yeah.
Now, this butting of heads didn't stop, ever. He made an off-duty arrest at one point, actually, while he was working at the 81st Precinct. And instead of being praised for his hard work, he was actually brought in by the higher brass and grilled. He was asked why he was out in his precinct when he wasn't on duty. I think his excuse was that he was taking his girlfriend home. And then they started grilling him on, well, who's your girlfriend? Why are you out with your girlfriend? Are you married? Is she married? And all of this for just making a simple arrest off duty. The brass weren't the only ones unhappy either. His fellow officers didn't really seem to like that he was enforcing the law even while off duty. But Serpico, he truly didn't care. He was there to do his job and do it well, no matter how bad it made the other officers look.
Well, you know what I mean? I still find it quite funny that he's out with his girlfriend and maiden the rest.
Yeah, can you imagine how that went?
just stand right there, babe. Stand right there. I just got to deal with this. Like, shut up! Stop resisting! Stop resisting! Babe, grab his legs! So it was a great dinner, right?
Yeah.
He could have just gone home and, you know,
made love to his girlfriend?
Yeah, yeah. So clearly justice was more important to Serpico.
Well, like I said, all of this over, above and beyond work that he was doing was making everybody look bad. And speaking of looking bad, that was another thing that really irked the other cops. Serpico had a very interesting style compared to the other officers. It was the 60s in America, and hippies were really hipping it up at this point. And since Serpico's unit sometimes patrolled in plain clothes, he thought it was best to be able to blend in. But this didn't sit very well with the straight-laced cops that felt that they were being out-policed by a hippie.
Yeah, because weren't they typically like short back and sides and a mustache?
Something like that, yeah. And you can imagine that they would just stick out like a sore thumb with their little short-sleeved, button-up, tucked-in shirts and their fucking, you know, cleaned, completely shined shoes walking around trying to fit in with the hippies. Like, hello, fellow youth. Like, come on, man. Now, I say all of this stuff, and I think the picture I'm kind of painting of Serpico at this point is RoboCop, kind of. Is that what it seems like?
No, actually, no, because you've already mentioned that he was kind of going as the hippie look, so...
Yeah, well, I think we really need to say what type of person Serpico was outside of work, because he actually wasn't always on duty. He wasn't some kind of... He wasn't just dressed as a hippie to make himself only blend in and to only do it for his job. Actually, outside of work, he didn't tell people he was a cop. He tried to hide it from his neighborhood because he lived in a neighborhood that was full of hippies at the time. But he actually really enjoyed a lot of things outside of work. He loved art. He loved going to operas, ballets, like really artistic things. He loved doing this stuff that was so different from what a cop would do, because he had this appreciation for art, culture, and stuff. And that's definitely something learned from obviously being the son of immigrants, but also being in Japan and traveling a bit. All of this stuff kind of made him into this really well-rounded person almost.
It does sound like, again, it does sound like he's got a lot to him, more than just a police officer, from what you're telling me. But I just got an envision like he's trying to force his hippie look, so he's just literally forcing himself to listen to Lynyrd Skynyrd all day.
Yeah, he's got his beard and all that stuff, but he still has like the short-sleeved button-up shirt tucked in. He's just trying his best to look like a hippie. Yeah. Coughing his lungs up on a joint.
Yeah, like I love myself a marijuana cigarette.
Well, with Frank's odd appearance, it was decided that he should probably transfer. And they decided to transfer him to a plain clothes unit.
So were you saying that it was like rocking the hippie look while being a uniformed officer?
Yeah, because his unit would sometimes go out as plain clothes. So,
oh, okay.
He did have long hair and a beard in police uniform, but he obviously wanted to be able to blend in when they decided to go out in plain clothes. This was a big thing for him. If you watch the film Serpico, you'll see that he really grows out his hair to look much more hippie-ish. He's not what you would picture a cop to be. And that's specifically... Not just specifically so he could blend in, but it was a big reason is that he wanted to be able to blend in with the people.
Were there not rules with the police and how you could look? I know in the military, maybe today at least anyway, you're not allowed to have a beard, are you?
No, it depends on the military, but in American military you can. I could because I had a waiver because I tricked a doctor. But you don't have to, you know, you're not allowed to grow one out. But I think at this time there weren't any strict rules on appearance, nothing like written down. It was just common knowledge that you dress appropriately. You're a professional. You dress as a professional. And this is why people didn't like it, is because they were like, that's just not how we do things.
Yeah, I just always thought with like these sort of, again, like the military, the police, I always thought they were kind of like standings and how you could look, how you could dress. I know this is kind of off topic, but I remember hearing a story about guys in the army who had been through basically hell for a week and they'd finally got back to the base. And the first thing the commander said to him was, "What, couldn't you shave?" You know what I mean? Like, yeah.
There's actually an interesting story about mustaches in America, in the American military. I don't remember exactly what his name was, but it was a captain, I think, and he was a pilot. And there was something, he was incredibly talented. And I think he won like some kind of battle. And he was like instrumental to winning this battle as a pilot. And mm-hmm. he always grew out this mustache. And the Air Force, I think it was, never allowed mustaches. And he always grew it out. And then he came back from this really intense battle, landed. And then his commanding officer came out, like really high ranking, like full bird colonel came out and was like, good job. Shave that mustache.
I thought mustaches were allowed.
They are allowed now. They were allowed after that guy made his mark on the military.
Fucking hell. Imagine that being the game changer. Like you've got to be a real man to pull off a mustache. I couldn't pull off a mustache.
No, I couldn't either. You have to kill a lot of people as well, apparently. Now, like I said earlier, it was decided that Frank should transfer to a plainclothes unit. And you'll remember that as a kid, he really wanted this exact job. However, mm-hmm. at this point in his career, he had seen the issues that the NYPD was facing and knew of the corruption pervading nearly every precinct.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, the plainclothes units were meant to be the worst. Now, Frank made this known to his current captain and kind of said that he didn't really want to go. But his captain pretty much shrugged it off and said, Frank, no one can make you do anything you don't want to do. Although, they were definitely going to try.
Hang on, so he didn't want the job that he'd always wanted?
He didn't, because this corruption in the NYPD had destroyed it for him, had destroyed the whole like image for him.
Oh.
And that's really sad. That's a really unfortunate part of the story.
Yeah, it is pretty depressing.
He literally grew up from the age of, well, definitely 14 at the least, knowing that he wanted to be a plainclothes cop. And now his whole ideology has been destroyed. His whole like idea of the plainclothes cop has been completely destroyed.
Fuck.
Now, when Serpico arrived at his new unit, he was almost instantly met with corruption. but not only did he witness the corruption, his unit was trying really hard to drag him into it. One of the biggest areas of corruption in the plainclothes units was the illegal gambling racket. Now, mm-hmm. these illegal clubs would basically pay the cops to allow them to stay open. This obviously made the cops a ton of side cash, and they kept offering some of that to Serpico. But each time he would decline. Now, the reason you want to give him some money is because if he's in on it too, he's not going to tell anybody.
Yeah.
You protect yourself by incriminating everyone else.
So that must be hard to turn down, though. Like, I don't know. Maybe that says something about my character, but money's money at the end of the day, and I'm pretty sure they were paid quite well to keep their fucking mouths shut.
We'll get there in a second. Now, finally, Frank's unit had enough of his abstinence, and he was met in a parking garage one night when he was leaving the precinct. He wasn't beaten up or anything. He was just forcefully handed an envelope with a large amount of cash in it, and he was not allowed to decline it.
I can think of worse things to fucking happen.
Yeah, well, worse things are going to happen.
Oh.
Now, this left Serpico with an ultimatum. He either had to rat out the other cops, or he had to keep the cash. And Frank's principles were really too strong, so he decided to report the officer to his captain. But what he found out was that his captain not only knew about the money, he had actually sanctioned the cops' actions of forcing the cash on Serpico. Basically, everyone in this precinct was completely dirty.
Hmm. Okay.
And after trying to report it to his captain, he decided to try to report it to his close sergeant, who was a bit more of a friend to him. But his sergeant just smiled, took the envelope, put it in his pocket, and thanked Serpico. To which Frank walked away absolutely disgusted.
See, I can kind of see how this guy might be seen as fucking annoying.
I mean, I get it.
Yeah, well, you know, it's like too much of a bit of a goody-goody.
But it's not even too much of a goody-goody. He's only doing one thing. He's only doing one thing that they are doing. He's doing one thing differently. He's just not taking money. That's one thing that they are doing.
I'd be pissed if I got ratted out by fellow officer.
He just went to talk to the captain. You know, he didn't talk to anybody higher yet, but he went to the captain and the sergeant, and those are relatively lower ranking in the scheme of things.
Yeah, well, snitches get stitches, innit? There's probably a reason I'm not a police officer.
There probably is. I think we found the reason.
Yeah, I do not belong in any sort of force like that.
No. Now, at this point, Frank was being beaten down by the corruption, and he truly wanted to do something about it, but he couldn't really find a way to do it. So he just kept getting offered bribes, and he just kept refusing until he was transferred to another precinct in the Bronx. And this precinct was actually squeaky clean, like something out of Paw Patrol.
Really?
No, just kidding.
Fuck it. You have to do your little gullible thing where you say something and I believe it and feel like an idiot.
No, yeah, I know. Now, Frank was offered a bribe pretty much his first day. However, something was a bit different to this precinct. The cops were a bit more forceful and serious about their bribes. And when Serpico denied the bribes, he was actually starting to put himself into real danger. But the other cops wouldn't actually find out about him denying the bribes just yet. You see, Serpico's partner, although he didn't really trust Frank in any way, he saw an opportunity. Since Serpico didn't want his cut, nobody would really miss it, would they? So he started to pocket Frank's cut. And the other cops had no clue until that partner transferred to another precinct a year later. And when Frank got a new partner and declined the money from him as well, he actually surprised the hell out of the other cops. They had been under the impression that he was taking bribes for a full year. Mm. Now, obviously, the other cops were furious when they found out, so Serpico was now in even more danger.
Still, I can't help but think, do you not think you'd take bribes if you were a cop?
In this day?
If it was just to keep an illegal gambling club open, do you not think you'd take the bribe? I would.
I might do now, but I'm gonna tell a story at the end. There's a little clip. There's a little quote at the end that I'll tell you, and it shows you kind of it's not just illegal gambling. Mm. It's not just that, and I don't think it ever stays just that. It always goes a bit further.
See, I think I could justify myself taking a bribe for something like an illegal gambling club where, you know, no one's really getting hurt. It's just a gambling club. Anything past that, then I might have a change of conscience. But
I don't know, man. You know what? If you did it with somebody pretty seedy, like in the mafia, you're getting a bribe from the mafia, and then they find a way to put you in their pocket, and then now you got to kill a family. What are you going to do?
I'm going to gun that family down.
Hey, it was, you know, it's illegal gambling. What are you going to do? Now, you see, Frank didn't actually want to be a whistleblower on the police. That's why he hadn't actually reported any issues any higher than his own captains. He kept it relatively in-house. He didn't want to be this explosion of, you know, information onto the public. He just wanted the system to work like it was supposed to. He just wanted to be a good cop. And at this point, Frank was in a bad place with corruption, almost feeling trapped. So he went to speak to a fellow detective that he trusted, David Dirk. Funny name.
It is a funny name.
Yeah, he passed away, unfortunately. Now, Dirk convinced... Sorry to bring down the mood. Unfortunate history. Now, Dirk convinced Serpico to report the corruption to even higher-ranking officers, kind of the central office of the NYPD, to bring it up to them. You know, not necessarily as high as they could possibly go, but it's high enough to cause some real issues. Now, reluctantly, Frank did, and he was actually promised by those higher-ranking officers that change would come. But the change never came.
Oh, who saw that coming?
Yeah, right? It took 2 years for anything to actually come from Serpico and Dirk's complaints. And there was finally a single case of corruption investigated involving 8 plain officers. Now, the investigators actually wanted Serpico to testify against the officers. I'm not sure if they just were setting him up or not, but it was a bad choice to ask him to. But word about them asking him spread very quickly, and he almost instantly started receiving death threats from other officers. Can you imagine receiving a death threat from a cop?
Oh, no, yeah, that's worrying, because are you going to call the police?
Exactly. You know what I mean? And even further to that, being a cop and getting a death threat from another cop, you have nothing. Who are you going to tell, the president? What are you supposed to do?
You got to send another death threat back.
You have to kind of like gang up with criminals. You know what I mean? You have to switch sides.
You kind of realize that the people that you're trying to enforce are better people than your colleagues.
Exactly. But again, Serpico's principles were too strong, and he completely ignored the death threats, and he testified anyway. which ended up putting all eight officers in prison.
Good? Question mark?
Just kidding.
Oh, fuck, Stike!
Only the lower-ranking officers were punished. Two were sent to prison, and the others were forced to resign, but nothing happened to the higher-ranking officers. Now, obviously, and quite rightly, this completely infuriated Serpico. He had worked for so long to bring this corruption to light. He had given all the evidence necessary for multiple investigations, but only one was looked into, and only the lower ranks were punished. He wanted this punishment to go higher, but now, here he was, a cop known for ratting out other cops. And not only that, it was also known that him ratting out other cops actually never carried any punishment. I've said it multiple times, but this obviously put Serpico into even more danger.
Yeah, it fucking did. I can imagine.
And he started wearing a gun now at all times, almost constantly on edge and growing more distant from the other officers. Now, that's when Frank met a higher-ranking officer by the name of Dillis, who doesn't really have a big part to play in the story, but the two did become friends, and Dillis agreed that he would help Frank fight against the NYPD corruption. He was a higher-ranking officer, so he had a bit more clout, so he could, if he spoke about something, it was much more likely to get attention.
I suppose there would be, like, it depends, because I don't really know, is it like the small minority that are twisted and crooked cops, or is it the majority?
Well, there's a quote at the end of the episode that's really interesting, and I'll tell you in a moment. Now, this high-ranking Dillis, his help would come in handy now because Serpico was at the end of the line and decided it was time to take the story public.
Okay.
Since all other options had failed up to this point, Serpico and Dirk felt it was best to take the story to the New York Times. This was a very big deal.
Yeah.
It was two cops blowing the whistle on a huge corruption enterprise. The entire NYPD. It was two cops against the entire NYPD. And actually, Dillis ends up joining them, so three cops. Serpico, Dirk, and Dillis all meet up with the paper for 2 hours. They did a big two-hour meeting up until, I think it was till midnight, to tell them all they know about the corruption. And the New York Times then goes and begins their research over the course, I think it was about 6 months. It's uncovered that the plainclothes squads around New York were all acting as a kind of regulatory body of the illegal gambling rings. They were in on every single gambling club. And this amounted to millions of dollars of bribe money being paid out every single year, just to cops. Millions of dollars every year.
Jesus Christ, I bet it's still like this now, you know.
Well, we'll talk about it in a second.
Maybe, okay, carry on. Yeah.
Now, when the story breaks, it's huge. You can actually read the story, the whole story, on the New York Times website. You just have to Google New York Times Police Corruption 1970, and they have a digital version that they've uploaded. It's very long, and they did a very detailed investigation into this. Now, it goes into so much detail about how corrupt the police really were. One story that really stood out to me, and this is the one I mentioned a bit earlier, Greg, to tell you how the corruption was a bit more than gambling.
Yeah.
This was a story in the article about a girl that had had an overdose. I'll quote the article here, but it doesn't say who the quote actually came from. I could actually think that this quote came from Serpico himself, possibly, but I'm not 100% sure. Now, here's a quote. "I remember one time we went on a call," a Brooklyn policeman said. "A girl had tried to commit suicide by taking an overdose of pills. Three patrol cars responded, and there were six of us standing around this little one-room apartment, the girl laying there just breathing. One of the guys walked over to her dresser, scooped up a large handful of Subway tokens, and just dropped them in his pocket. Nobody said a word, and we all just stood there. And it kind of killed me, but there was nothing to do. There was no sense telling the sergeant because he was just part of the club." Now, see, that to me makes me think that there's so much more that they're doing, and they don't care that they're doing it.
Yeah.
And in New York, I mean, especially some girl's sitting here dying on the floor and you're just going to steal from her and not even give a shit about it. That's not what a cop does.
No, it's not. That's pretty wrong, but I can see how it happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, obviously you can see how any of it happens. Now, a few things came from this New York Times article. The current police commissioner actually resigned, as you would hope. And then the mayor appointed a commission to investigate the matter, which went on to be called the Knapp Commission. And Serpico, he got transferred.
Really?
Yeah, that was it. He was still, as you can imagine, on everyone's shit list. Even after providing this enormous amount of very important information, they just transferred him to the narcotics team.
Oh, they put him on the narc team.
They put him on the narc team, yeah. Now, this story affected everyone, not just the bad cops, but even honest cops, too. The image the story painted of the NYPD tarnished everyone, not just the corrupt. And if Serpico was in a bad position before, he was in a much worse position now, because even honest cops wouldn't mind seeing him dead.
Again, I can kind of see how people would be pissed off at him. I can kind of relate. Again, it probably says more about me than it does him. But
yes, I suppose so.
I can see why his fellow officers may be just a touch pissed off at him. Especially the good ones, you know, the ones who haven't done anything wrong. Because he has kind of, in a way, chucked the whole lot under the bus. Yes, he has raised corruption and he has, you know, faced the bad cops. But imagine being a good cop in this scenario, someone who hasn't done anything wrong, and now you're automatically painted as this same picture as everyone else. I can see why officers might be annoyed at him.
I suppose it's not just that. It's even the current argument for the police in America of saying that the good cops, you can't necessarily call them good cops if they're not standing up to the bad cops. If you're allowing something to happen, it's pretty bad, you know? I mean, you wouldn't allow 9/11 to happen, you know, or you wouldn't allow a grandmother to get punched in the face.
I would 100% let both those things up. I'm joking.
Now, in his new unit, Frank pretty much kept to himself most of the time while at work, unless he had to go on a call. And it's odd that a cop would be in the most danger when out with his partners, but that's exactly what Serpico's life was. And this is when things went wrong.
Okay.
While working in narcotics, Frank was on a drug bust with two other cops. They were observing a drug dealer at his apartment, looking for an opportunity to arrest him. They had been tailing him for quite a while. They witnessed the dealer make a sell to a druggie, so Serpico decided to approach the dealer's door. He knocked on the door and started speaking Spanish, pretending to want to buy drugs. The dealer kept his door chained, though, and refused to open it. So Serpico came forward a bit, but then got wedged in the door, and he noticed the dealer had a gun, so he tried to wrestle it away from him. But he had trouble because he couldn't move. Frank looked back at the other two officers, who hadn't actually moved from their position. He asked for help, turned back towards the door, and was shot in the face.
Jesus fucking Christ.
Now Frank fell to the ground. Blood was spurting from the hole, inches from his left eye. And his partners did not call for help.
Dickheads.
A tenant of the building had heard the commotion and called the police. And Serpico was found and thrown in the back of a squad car, blood still pouring from his face. He reached the hospital and was dragged inside. And the nurse saw him and said, "No, this man is dead." Until he started to mumble. Serpico had survived the bullet to the face, but only by mere centimeters. Had the bullet gone too far right, it would have paralyzed him. Had it gone too far left, his carotid artery would have been severed. Too far up, and it would have been lodged in his brain. He survived a bullet to the face from about 18 inches away. His survival was purely just luck. You can explain a bit why, is because when a bullet enters the body, it's very unpredictable. So when a bullet goes into your body, it can actually bounce around and leave in any part of you. So say you have your shot in the front, say you're shot in the chest, that bullet might bounce around crazy enough to shoot out your leg.
See, because from what I've understood from bullet holes, that again, the impact hole is usually quite small. It's the one that leaves that creates the big fucking, that creates the issues.
That was something also that he was lucky with, because it was actually lodged near his left sinus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, normally, when a fellow cop is shot in the line of duty, other officers line up to donate blood to help save them. That's a very big thing. I think it also happened during 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
None of the NYPD showed up for Serpico.
Not one?
Not one.
Dickheads, again.
I think Serpico said it in the documentary that not one of the 36,000 showed up for him.
Fuck it off.
As you can probably imagine, this incident destroyed Serpico's view of the police. He no longer saw the NYPD as a total force for good, at least not in its current state. However, he did receive an award that he had always wanted, a gold detective shield, but it felt meaningless. Likely because it was just handed to him over a counter. He had no ceremonies or no honors for his bravery. And that is one thing different from the film. We were talking about this earlier in the episode. You said we were talking about what was different. In the film, he's in his hospital bed and given the badge as kind of like a here you go, Frank, you know, type thing. It didn't happen that way. It happened when he got out of the hospital and they just kind of gave it to him over the counter. They just said, here you go. And that was it.
Again, it says something about his morals, doesn't it, really? Because it must be so hard to have, you know, just kind of have everyone against you, but still kind of stick to your beliefs.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
stick to your beliefs till you get shot in the face. And it's not known, actually, whether this, where him getting shot, was a setup or not. It's still not really known if he was set up.
Fuck.
After surviving the shooting, Serpico was asked to speak at the Knapp Commission's hearing, the one that was investigating the corruption, and he did so, and he gave a rousing speech about the changes that were necessary in the NYPD, and the commission agreed and found an intense level of corruption in the NYPD, which led to 10 years of complete overhaul and changes to help lower the levels of corruption in the force. Although, to your point earlier, Greg, Serpico himself says that there is still an enormous amount of problems in the NYPD, which may have even gotten worse, but that's a story for another time.
Yeah.
Serpico, he decided to leave the force, obviously, yeah. And he also left the country. He moved to Europe to live for years, about 10 years or so, I think it was, and here he met his wife. I think he met her in Holland, but unfortunately, she passed away at the age of 29 from cancer.
Fucking hell, he can't get a break, can he?
He cannot get a break.
Jesus Christ.
Frank then traveled around the U.S. and Europe for a while before settling in a cabin in upstate New York, where he lives today.
He's still alive?
He is still alive.
Fuck.
Now, Serpico once described the NYPD, to your point earlier, Greg, he described the NYPD as 10% honest, 10% corrupt, and 80% wish that they were honest. He fought corruption from the moment he entered the NYPD to the moment he left. And the entire time he was met with nothing but aggression and opposition. But he never gave up. And eventually he did topple this enormous enemy in a way.
Yeah.
He did make an impact. But he was still shunned. He was pushed aside from the NYPD. And it seems that society just wouldn't allow Serpico to be what he always wanted to be, a good cop.
That's all he wanted. And it took him getting shot in the face to really make a fucking impact.
And that is what's truly unfortunate.
And that is truly unfortunate.
And that's the story of Frank Serpico. Wyatt Earp of New York. I don't know what to call him.
I'm going to go watch the film now.
You definitely should. You should definitely watch the film. It's great. Al Pacino. I love Al Pacino in it. Mm-hmm. Most of the scenes, the badass scenes that you watch, and you're like,
they really happened.
Yeah. There's a scene where a knife is pulled on him inside the precinct by another cop, and he just grabs the knife and the cop and just flips him over the shoulder because Frank Serpico was actually a black belt. So he's pretty badass.
I'll have to watch it because I'm not sure if I've seen it, but I know I've seen it. I know the name of the film, so I'll have to watch it. Because
definitely watch it.
He sounds like a very, very interesting man, very stuck in his ways.
He is an interesting man.
In a good way.
He's even, to this day, he came out with a new documentary, and he's talking about how there is current corruption now. I don't believe he likes Trump. he's a very interesting guy. And everybody, if you want to read Peter Mass's book on him, Serpico, just go to our website, go to unfortunatehistory.com. There's a link where you can buy it either in the US or in the UK. And if you buy it from our website, we get a little bit of that. So it helps support the show, but it also helps support the author, and it also helps support Serpico. I don't know if it actually helps support the author because I think he died.
Grease our palms, people. Grease
our palms. Grease Serpico's palms. Come on now. He'll take that bribe. I promise you. He'll take that one. Well, that was it, man. I hope you enjoyed that episode.
Yeah, man. It was well interesting. Again, I did not know that about him. Again, it says a lot about people who truly believe what, you know, in their morals. And again, it sounds like he was generally a good person. He wanted the best for people.
God, it's kind of like the guy he's kind of like Mohammed Mossadegh we discussed last week.
Yeah. And it's just, again it's, it kind of makes you think that maybe you have to be an arsehole to get through life, otherwise you get shot in the face.
I mean, even if you're an asshole, you might still get shot in the face, but I don't know, man. It's rough. I don't know.
There's one thing to take away from this episode. You're always at risk of getting shot in the face, no matter how you live.
Yeah, so buck up, champ. Like, you'll be fine.
It'll be good.
Let's talk about some updates now. First update, we are very close to getting 10,000 downloads.
All right.
Holy crap. We've had so many listeners, man. It's been very awesome every single day. I want to give a huge shout out to the TuneIn Radio crowd. TuneIn Radio has been really showing up for us. We've had a ton of people from there. Ton of people from iHeartRadio as well. If you're on iHeartRadio, please just Google iHeartRadio and Unfortunate History, and you can leave us a comment on our podcast page on their website. Show us some love, because we have somebody on there that didn't show us some love. So if we can balance that out with a lot more love, that'd be great. Thank you to everybody on Stitcher. Thank you to everybody on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. It's been all crazy. I mean, we've got a lot of support, man. It's been really, really cool recently. Big update on the website. I have now changed the website from being just a general podcast website. We're now morphing it into an article website, so you can actually read all of the articles that I write for all of the episodes. And I'm actually going to be adding articles that we may not cover in the future either, or that we may cover later in the way in the future. So if you want to read some information about some cool stuff from Unfortunate History, you can just go to unfortunatehistory.com. And all of the web traffic goes to support our show. If you read article, there are some ads on there and stuff. And feel free to click on them. Do all that. They're not all in your face. I just put them throughout the article and stuff. So don't worry. They're not like going to pop up on every place. But it does really help support us at least a little bit. So if you would, go to unfortunatehistory.com and check it out.
And also buy some socks.
You can buy some socks if you want from the merch store. I know we had, I think it was Dwayne ordered a mug and ordered it for one of his friends. I think his wife's friend, maybe. And they really enjoyed it. So, hey.
Big love, Dwayne. Big love.
Big love. And big love. Thank you so much for buying the mug. And I hope you enjoy the mug as well. I really hope you guys are enjoying the show. I'm really happy with how it's going so far. It's been a light in the shit that is 2020.
That it has. And here's to 2021. Let's hope it's not quite as fucking shit.
I hope so. I hope not. Everybody, I haven't said this in a while, but show your family and tell a friend about the podcast, please. Because we are getting more and more listeners, and it's getting bigger and bigger. And I'd love to do like some kind of like meetup. You know, like a bar meetup
when we can.
Yeah, exactly. Like by the time we're able to meet up, if we have a lot of listeners in New York or something, we meet up at Frank Serpico's old drinking hole, and we all just have a drink and chat about shit. That would be so fun, man. I mean, yeah, but please show your family and tell a friend. It really does help us out. The word of mouth. I mean, we've pretty much grown over the last couple of months just by word of mouth.
Exactly. That's all it's been.
Yeah. We don't have the money to put into the podcast as like these big companies do to advertise the shit out of it. Mm-hmm. We just don't have that. But it's been slowly but surely taken off. You know, we get awesome reviews and some crappy reviews, but the majority have been very, very awesome. So yeah, thank you guys. Greg, do you want to shout anybody out?
I've got no shout outs this week. I've come into this one pretty blind. So, yeah, just big love to all the people who are listening. Love yous, and whoever's leaving the reviews, even the shit reviews, we still like the feedback.
We absolutely do. We love constructive criticism. Thank you for that. we had a guy write in, I think it was Dave. He told me about a new documentary coming out about the 1953 Iranian coup. And it's shedding some new light on the whole thing as well. So he really liked the episode. He said it was great. And he said that there's more information that we should find out. So listeners, check out that documentary. That I'm sure that would be really interesting to see. But listen to the episode first.
definitely. And subscribe.
If you want to follow the show, just Google Unfortunate History. If you want to follow me, just Google Cody Pennington. Greg?
I don't even remember what my Instagram handle is at this point. It's probably greg.skinner93 on Instagram. If you want to follow me, follow it.
Yeah, do that. With that said, unfortunately, we gotta go. So stay unfortunate, everybody.
Stay unfortunate, guys. Ta-ra.
Bye. Bye.